Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another Saturday afternoon session of Zero Point Radio. And in the background, I have a co-host, James Moffat from Toronto. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have a focus for today. I know I have some news items I'd like to bring up and talk about at the beginning of the show and an article. And otherwise, I think we're going to open up the phone lines through the show today. We'll give out the numbers if you want to grab a pen or pencil. And the number in the U.S. is 877-876-5227. And in Canada, it's 888-810-8322. So I wouldn't call in right away if someone is going to call in, but give us 15, 20 minutes to get started here. And I do invite people to view my website at www.zeropoint.ca for Canada, and I come to you from just south of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, and Jim's in Toronto. Okay, so any thoughts, Jim? Anything you thought of for today, or...
Well, you know, I was thinking that maybe you could actually, if you want to sort of give an overview of the Zero Point and Heart Doctrine, like just a brief overview of your work. But I wanted to come back several weeks ago when you were still in New Zealand. I gave the beginnings of a presentation on the life of Gurdjieff, and I talked about Gurdjieff appearing in Moscow in 1912 and meeting P.D. Uspensky, who was a journalist and a mathematician and a philosopher who had been searching for what he called the miraculous, in other words, the esoteric teachings about the nature of human beings and their possibilities of their conscious evolution. And then I focused in my talk on the original, on the first few years at which Uspensky describes in Search of the Miraculous about his interactions with Gurdjieff and this very strange man who clearly had made some, Uspensky's opinion, had made some sort of contact with an esoteric school and had great knowledge and understanding. So I began to get into that. And then I really focused, as I say, I didn't even get them out of Russia because they ended up leaving in 1917 when the Russian Revolution started. Both Gurdjieff and Uspensky ended up in the Caucasus for a while and then eventually made their way to Constantinople and then split up with Uspensky going to London and Gurdjieff going to France where he opened his Institute for the Harmonious Development of Man. And I one of the things that we talked about when you came back from New Zealand is we talked about this idea that in the West, it's very interesting because I think Gurdjieff is one of the most extraordinary figures in history and certainly one of the most extraordinary spiritual figures in history and one of the most extraordinary mystics in history. I think he's really quite unique in some ways, it's odd that he's not better known, that his teaching is not better known. But in other ways, when you begin to study it and understand it, you realize that in some sense, it's appropriate that he's not better known and that his ideas are not more widespread, that they sort of have trickled down in some senses and been diluted, I think, as they've been spread. But the core of the teaching...
I mean, it's interesting to note, though, generally, how... Even though it's a very deep psychological teaching, people in the mainstream of modern university education would never get exposure to any of the Gurdjieff psychology.
No,
like,
yeah,
I mean, we both went through and spent like 10 years as graduate students in the system or something, and you know, no one was familiar with those at all. In fact, the whole esoteric tradition, not just Gurdjieff Uspensky,
but in
the mainstream, you never get exposure to the secret doctrine of Blavatsky or Kabbalistic psychology or other esoteric psychologies. People are just never exposed to it ordinarily.
Yeah, and
but,
and that's what I was sort of making my, the point I was going to make with that was that I wanted to sort of return to this idea that we ended up discussing. I think one of the reasons why Gurdjieff, and as you say, it's not just Gurdjieff, it's the entire esoteric tradition is invisible within modern thought and modern academic studies of psychology, particularly where it's most applicable and where it really you have to question the entire history of modern Western psychology and its ignorance of these ideas because they're so profound. And I would say it's they're light years beyond anything in modern academic psychology because they deal with the most fundamental topic in psychology, which academic psychology has largely ignored, what is the nature of consciousness. And I think one of the main reasons is that, I was thinking about this a little earlier, was that one of the main reasons is that we just don't recognize, we have this cultural prejudice in the West, which I think has come down to us largely from the Enlightenment on, that we don't recognize the idea that people can differ in terms of their consciousness and being, that there are, in fact, spiritual figures who are more developed and who are masters, and that not everybody is equal in the sense of, in terms of the level of their consciousness and being. Now, that's sort of an anti-democratic idea in a sense of, in the democratic ideal that came out of the Enlightenment, post-Enlightenment, is that all men are created equal, although even that was, not really, it didn't apply to everybody, it didn't apply to blacks, and it didn't apply to Jews, and it didn't apply to women, but the general idea is that everybody's equal. Well, we're all born in the same mess, but some people do, through their efforts, consciously evolve, and there's no recognition of this in the entire Western thought and philosophy or psychology. Nobody takes seriously the idea that people can differ demonstrably in their level of consciousness and being. Now, on the other hand, in the East, this is sort of taken for granted, where holy men and spiritual figures have existed for thousands of years and are not only is their legitimacy acknowledged, they don't have committees to investigate their claims for the paranormal or their spiritual progression. They're not only recognized, but they're celebrated and they're honored. And so you have a very different kind of tradition in the East versus the West. And I think this is one of the fundamental failings of modern Western thought, is that it doesn't recognize these differences. And the implications of this are enormous for all areas of thought, from psychology to cosmology. I think it's the great unseen, hidden variable, in a sense, that's not acknowledged in modern thought.
Yeah, it ties into Uspensky's explanation. He says that there are like two psychologies. And he said that never in history had there been so many competing psychological theories like in the modern thought of his era. But that none of these psychologies only studied man as people imagined him to be, or they didn't study the real man but only an artificial man. And then he said there was a second type of psychology, which he defined as the psychology of a man's possible evolution. And he explained that this idea of evolution, like in the West, we only understand the idea of evolution in a physical way, like the evolution of human beings from higher primates and them from lower mammals, and like the whole idea of physical evolution. But that we didn't have the idea of the possible evolution of the inner human being, the inner man, in a sense. And it's like Gurdjieff explains that really we use the word man, and it's like you say, it sounds as though we're all on the same level, but he says, well, there are really seven classes of men, or seven levels that a person might attain in their own evolution. And he says most people are men number one, two, or three, who are dominated by their physical, emotional, or intellectual functions. But the first type of higher man is someone who awakens what he calls a higher emotional center and attains the true state of self-consciousness, which Gurdjieff says is a distinctively different state of consciousness than those of man number one, two, or three, who are in what he calls a state of relative consciousness or waking sleep. So the first kind of level for someone to attain the state of self-consciousness, like that, a person who had attained that, other people couldn't even understand that because that would be invisible to him. So Gurdjieff suggested there were these like higher types, and Gurdjieff himself seems to have been of one of those higher types. So
yeah,
that ties it back in the idea of evolution, as you were saying.
Yeah, and I think in one of his speeches he says that, you know, that on the level of the individual, that evolution for an individual versus evolution for a species, they occur in two different time scales, and that the evolution for the individual is the evolution of consciousness, and that this can't happen automatically. That this requires effort and is a result of conscious effort. So in other words, in order to develop consciousness, you have to make a systematic effort to awaken it within yourself. And that's the great...
Yeah, otherwise it doesn't happen.
It can't happen mechanically.
Yeah.
As he says, you know, we live in a world where we stand between an involutionary current where everything manifests out of a single unified state and descends through different levels, and an evolutionary current which involves the raising of consciousness and awareness and a return to that state of unity. And so, you know, as he said, you know, man stands between these two currents, and he can either involve or he can evolve, but possibilities of evolution for human beings involve the evolution of consciousness, and that consciousness cannot evolve mechanically or just happen automatically. It can only result from effort, and it can only result from effort which is guided by somebody who is relatively more awakened than people in the normal waking state. So that you need a teacher, or you need a master, somebody who has developed one of these higher levels of consciousness in order to help you to develop your own consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much in the Gurdjieff teaching. It was funny, I just happened to, on the mailing list, someone directed my attention to a newest article, or actually from 2007, from the International Journal of Transpersonal Studies, okay?
Okay.
This is an article, does the concept of altered states of consciousness rest on a mistake? And it's by Adam Rock and Stanley Krippner, who is quite well known in the consciousness literature. So here's this article from last year's Journal of Transpersonal Studies. And the main argument in this paper is we argue, quote, we critically examine the term altered state of consciousness and argue that the affixing the qualifier altered state to consciousness results in the theoretical confusion of consciousness and its content. That is, consciousness is mistaken for the content of consciousness. We refer to this as the consciousness/content fallacy. Now, here it's interesting because when I read this article, I think, oh, well, I was writing that 25 years ago, because in the Gurdjieff teaching, I was interested in the study of consciousness when I came upon the teaching. And one of the first things that's emphasized is that consciousness has to be distinguished from what they call the psychological functions of thinking, feeling, and sensation. And what that's doing, in a way, is distinguishing between consciousness, like some type of pure awareness or consciousness, versus the contents of conscious experience. So you can be conscious of your thoughts and mental intentions and so on. You can be conscious mentally, or you can be conscious of emotions and feelings, or you can be conscious of sensation and movement through the body. So you have these different contents of consciousness. But Gurdjieff emphasizes the consciousness is something different than the object side, which is the thoughts, feelings, or sensations. So then that's essentially what this paper is about. They're calling it the consciousness/content fallacy, and arguing that historically people have identified different states of consciousness or altered states of consciousness, they're saying, are really just alterations of the contents of consciousness. Okay, so they're saying we talk about altered states of consciousness, but really it's just altered states of the contents of consciousness, and that there's no shift in the consciousness.
Yeah.
They don't explore that, though.
Yeah.
But anyway, what struck me about it is they're saying consciousness is separate from the psychological functions. And I was thinking, oh, well, I learned that 25 years ago, 30 years ago, when we began studying the fourth way teaching.
That's in your dissertation. I mean, that's 30 years ago.
Yeah, my PhD thesis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dealt with that.
So,
you know,
and I'm a little confused though. So are they kind of saying that these states aren't real? That they're just different? It sounds like they're sort of saying that there are no altered states of consciousness. That there are just different contents of consciousness. Is that what they're arguing? Because
they don't really address that next issue of are there. Can you say legitimately that there are altered states of consciousness? They don't take it that further step to question that or how that might be a legitimate term. They don't do that. And they only deal with this idea that consciousness is separate from the contents. That's all they so it's a confusing article. It's not a valuable article. I mean, it's an important point they're making, but then they don't address the issue of whether are there altered states of consciousness, where it's not just shifts in the contents, but a more fundamental shift in the level of consciousness.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because I think one of the things in terms of studying the fourth way and the teaching of Gurdjieff, and then Uspensky's version of the Gurdjieff teaching as elaborated in the In Search of the Miraculous and in The Fourth Way and The Psychology of Man's Possible Evolution, his books. I think, like, when we were first studying this, the thing that really, 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 I just cannot overemphasize, you know, it's impossible to overemphasize how important this is this idea that we don't remember ourselves, but by trying to remember ourselves, by trying to increase our awareness of some sort of witnessing or observing process when we're thinking, acting, and feeling, that first of all, that trying to do this and acknowledging that this is a possible state of consciousness and that it's distinctive from our normal waking state is something that's completely missing in modern psychology and in Western thought. Like, nobody kind of has this idea that we don't remember ourselves, and nobody understands the importance of it. So, like,
or
of
the related idea that we could wake up, like we could remember, mean if we did.
And that the transition, like, that for someone who would actually could remember themselves, which is really what Gurdjieff calls a state of self-conscious awareness, that this stands in relation to our normal waking consciousness, as our normal waking consciousness does to our sleep state, like our dream state, that it involves terms of relations and a state of awareness which is more encompassing, which is more objective in terms of reality, in terms of perceiving reality, and that this would be a dramatic change. And see, like, what I think is that even those who are sympathetic to the idea of higher states of consciousness, I think they typically think of these things in terms of paranormal or mystical states in which somebody has sort of a full-blown experience of cosmic unity or something really quite extraordinary. Whereas I would say that what they don't see is that in between is this state of self-conscious awareness, and that to acquire this through repeated effort or to even to know it within oneself on a transitory basis, which is all that one can really do at the beginning, it opens you up to a whole different understanding of how this state of self-conscious awareness, what Gurdjieff calls self-remembering, is a third state, and that this is really something that completely transforms your understanding of what consciousness is and what it could be. And that's what people don't recognize, I think. And that it's, that in the beginning, even like as they say, when you know it in yourself, when you have these experiences, when you remember yourself, it's not like you have some sort of fantastic cosmic insight as a result of it, but you realize how this is different and how this could, if you could do this all the time or if you could do this more often, it would completely transform your understanding of the meaning of everything. And at the same time, it reveals how our normal state is a state of waking sleep, how everything happens, how we don't possess unity in the sense of a single I, and that we can't do, as Gurdjieff says, that everything happens. So it leads to, it's kind of a, it penetrates the veils of illusion in which we normally live our lives and which are invisible to us because they're part of the medium through which we exist. We don't see how our illusory consciousness imposes itself on our interpretation of the world and its meaning. And then you see, if you could remember yourself, like I think Uspensky says at one point, real psychology begins when a man recognizes that he does not remember himself, but with effort he could do so. And I would say that, and that's why I say, like, I've said this several times on this program, but I think that really the attempt to remember oneself repeated is the most potent psychological experiment that anybody can undertake, because it reveals the illusory nature of our normal waking state of consciousness, and at the same time discloses the potential to become a conscious being and how that would transform everything.
Yeah.
And then getting back to the point I was making earlier, the point is that on some level, all of this would be theoretical if somebody hadn't actually done it. You know, if there weren't exemplars of people who had realized higher states of consciousness and being, then it would just be another set of ideas in a sense. But to me, like, that's what's important about trying to understand somebody like Gurdjieff, teachers and esoteric teachers, mystics and masters, is that these people have realized these states of consciousness and being, and that they are that their level of being is demonstrably different from that of most people. And this, as I say, is something that in the West, and especially in academic thought, nobody recognizes or gives this idea any credence. But it to me, it's an undeniable reality. And that's when I first started studying Gurdjieff in the fourth way. Like, even the difference between Gurdjieff and Uspensky is that Uspensky knew these things, these ideas, in his head, and he had knowledge of these things, but he didn't understand them. He didn't fully incorporate them into his being, so he couldn't live them, whereas Gurdjieff definitely could. There was a very clear difference between these two individuals, both brilliant in their own ways, but Gurdjieff was somebody who had somehow transformed himself and realized these things, and that's something that, if you're going to be a psychologist, that you have to take into account. That's one of those system-destroying facts that Uspensky refers to, as the fact that these people have existed. Now, some people would say, well, you don't know that, but, well, yeah, and on some level that's true, but that about Gurdjieff's level of consciousness and being, but I think that the preponderance of evidence leads to that conclusion. And it's not just Gurdjieff. I mean, there's many, many different examples in the history of esoteric teachings of people who are realized in some level. And I guess if what they said wasn't so brilliant and perceptive, I would be less willing to grant that idea serious consideration. But as I say, I would stand that whole question on its head and say, why don't people who study psychology study these people, and their teachings? Because there are ideas that can be studied systematically and can be judged and evaluated. And it seems to me quite clear that what these people are saying about the nature of consciousness is so far beyond anything that Western science understands about consciousness that it's a difference between, postgraduate work and kindergarten. I mean, they're just light years beyond where Western psychology is.
Yeah, that's what I felt immediately on studying the Gurdjieff-Uspensky teaching. Like, I know I came at the time to regard what I was being taught elsewhere in psychology, like in my academic studies. Like, I thought that was Mickey Mouse psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was Mickey Mouse a lot because of the behavioral influence.
Yeah.
And viewing us as simply higher primates or lower organisms, and that we're simply controlled by the laws of conditioning. And there was a denial of consciousness in the conditioning literature. Like, people couldn't, even back then, they didn't understand the role of consciousness as it related to learning and conditioning. And that's how I became interested in consciousness, really, because the idea is that it's through the awakening of consciousness that we overcome the patterns of conditioning. So that was also in clinical therapy, psychotherapy, the idea that we have to bring the unconscious into consciousness. So somehow consciousness is like that central issue in psychology that's never really been addressed fully. And then we don't even begin to think that, oh yeah, well, people might attain higher states of consciousness. Like, there's no concept of that at all. In fact, the study of consciousness was ignored for 60 years almost in modern psychology. And then they brought consciousness back in. But all the time they equated it with mental activities and the functions of the mind. So it wasn't really consciousness, but they often equated consciousness with thinking, you know, and analyzing things with the mind, and confused that. Whereas for Gurdjieff, consciousness is not thinking. It is not the activities of the mind.
Yeah.
You can be conscious of that, but consciousness is something separate. He compares it most often to light, which illuminates things so that we can be aware of the objects illuminated. So consciousness is like an inner form of light that allows us to be aware of our thoughts, feelings, and sensations.
Uspensky says at one point that consciousness can be thought of as being the background to our psychological functions, and that background is a source of illumination, which can either be dim or it can be brighter, some different gradation of illumination, so that when we're more conscious, there's more light, and when we're less conscious, it's darker. So things, in that scheme, things operate as either a more conscious or a more mechanical level, and that we... through our own efforts, we have the capacity, by trying to remember ourselves, to develop this light within ourselves, to separate from our psychological functions and not be mentally absorbed or embedded in them. Those are your terms, which I like, with the term of mental embeddedness, is that in our normal waking state, or state of waking sleep, we generally are embedded in our psychological functions, so that when we're thinking or acting or feeling, we have no strong sense of an I which stands apart from and observes these functions, and that our I is in a sense is really, it's a fiction, in the sense that because our I just consists of whatever we're identified with emotionally and embedded in mentally and physically.
Yeah, that's why Gurdjieff says we think we have one I, but really we have all these little I's, a plurality of little I's, and we do not know real I, even though he suggests real I is there all the time. But we're not awake to it. We can't connect with it in a way. It's above us, and so a real I is there, but we can't connect with it. He says we can't connect with the higher centers, the higher emotional center or the higher intellectual center, because our level of vibration is kind of like so low, and our consciousness is all tied up in these patterns of conditioning. So we have very little consciousness. And I like it how in Beelzebub Tales, Gurdjieff uses the phrase of how we have established a false consciousness system. He uses that term, and I really like that. I really saw that most over the last couple of years, when I kind of woke up to realizing what was happening in the world, and how much I'd been kind of deceived by the media about the political situation and the law and the country and what was really happening in the world. It was this completely fanciful thing. You know, I thought our politicians were generally honorable men and women. You know, I didn't think they were all kind of criminal elites, you know, and all this racketeering that goes on and this kind of denial and war crimes, everything like this. I had no idea it was so, you know, these people were so mentally, emotionally, spiritually destroyed, you know.
So how do you relate that to this idea of a false consciousness system? I mean,
well, I had bought into it. I saw the 9/11 attack on that day, and I believed in the Osama bin Laden. And sorry,
this is part of
I believe the whole. Say again.
So you're saying that this is part of your false consciousness system? Is like
yeah. Well, to me, it was this whole false consciousness system. You know, I wasn't very politically astute because my interest has been science and consciousness studies, things like that through my life. And I knew, you know, I've always been less knowledgeable about history and the wars and politics than you have been. Okay. But then I had this, like, it's so funny because it was my, like, 15-year-old son who showed me movie Loose Change and said, Dad, what do you think of this? You know? And I watched the movie and I mean, in a way, it blew my mind because I could see immediately, holy smokes, the whole thing's been a fraud. It's so obvious. How could, you know, I'd never really thought it out. But then you watch that, and you know, it wasn't just watching that movie, but then turning to the internet and watching, you know, 9/11 mysteries and all these documentaries, and then all the, you know, getting introduced to Alex Jones, who gives you a much broader kind of view of the elites in the world and other false flag things. And it's just terrible, and it's kind of waking up to this nightmare, you know. Whereas previously, you know, I watched the CTV and the CBC and the CNN, and I thought they were informative kind of news sources. And then I realized, now I see it, holy smokes, these guys are all part of this kind of neo-Nazi propaganda machine. They've done this intentionally. They've intentionally kind of deceived the people of Western society. It's astonishing. You know, 80% of the people are 90% are completely asleep to it. They kind of believe in all the lies, you know. I mean, at least 30% of the U.S. population supports George Bush, okay? Now, granted, you know, 30%.
Yeah.
And, like, how can they? Like, how can't people see what's happening in the world, in American society? And, you know, it's an odd time in history because all this knowledge is kind of coming out where people are waking up to seeing the whole deceit of what has happened, like in American politics and what America's really been doing in the world. You know, we've been given the Hollywood version, you know. So I always kind of grew up like U.S. I thought it was like a big brother, you know. They were like a society of just people, and, they protected us from the bad guys. And then you kind of wake up and you realize, holy smokes, you know, we are the bad guys. We are the terrorists ourselves. You know, they're within our society. And all of these things we've been lied to about the course of World War I, course of World War II, the causes of the Depression, the breaking apart of America, the underhanded scheme to bring about the North American Union and enslave us, and, you know, we're sprayed with chemtrails all the time. We're sprayed here five times last week. We had heavy chemtrail spraying in Ottawa. So here are these people trying to poison us from the air through their non-lethal warfare methods, it's called, because it's not immediately lethal. It just brings about greater sickness in the population, and they do well selling their pharmaceuticals, and their pharmaceuticals are all lies, you know. And last week, the Canadian government was trying to pass BC-51, which prohibits people in Canada from having access to multiple vitamins and health food products. They're trying to prohibit this in Canada. that actually prevents people from being well. They don't want people to be well. They, you know, it's so devious. It's so criminal. You know,
there was some sort of statement the other day. The Canadian government has now. I don't have the exact terminology for this, but the equivalent of the Freedom of Information Act in the States, where you can find out what the government's been doing. You can apply, you know, for disclosure of government activities for stuff that isn't classified. And I mean, there's all sorts of stuff journalists do this routinely, where they, well, the Canadian government is doing away with this. And the report was, you know, they described some journalists saying this is incredibly distressing and disturbing. And at the end, they had this little tagline on, and they said that the Canadian government said that something to the effect that government departments, found this act to be unpalatable. It wasn't even like that. It was so Orwellian. It was like, that they found it uncomfortable or something. Well, that's the whole point, you dopes. You know, like,
so they didn't pass it then.
Oh no, they passed it. They're passing
it.
I mean, yeah, but the point is that government departments don't like it. Well, of course they don't like it. That's the whole point of the act, you idiots. It's like, you know, I mean, it's so Orwellian to say, you know, the government departments don't like it. Yeah, well, that's the whole point. It's to disclose stuff that they're trying to keep secret from people. You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, of course they don't like it. You know, it wouldn't work if they liked it. You know,
yeah.
And but that's I mean, again, it's like, you know, well, where do these guys get off like doing that? Like it's just incredible the level of secrecy. There was an excellent article in the New York Times about, I think it was on Sunday, not last week but the week before, I believe, April 20th, I think, and it was about it was a big article, and it was on the front page, and it was about how the American networks employ former military people to present, come on and do their analysis of what's happening in Iraq and Afghanistan and the military situation. This is all post 9/11, and how this was all orchestrated by Rumsfeld post 9/11, and that the idea was to control. To use these people, like most of these people are, you know, like colonels and above, generals, lieutenant generals, whatever, higher ranking people. So they go on television and they're supposedly independent analysts, but they were being fed all this stuff by the Pentagon, by Rumsfeld, and to portray the situation. And I mean, there's many examples they cite where people, the Times applied under the Freedom of Information Act to gain access to all sorts of emails between these people and the Pentagon. And really what they're doing is, it's just, this is the propaganda arm of the Defense Department. And these people are all go on and say, oh, there's some sort of independent analyst. But it even gets worse, because a lot of them are involved in companies that are directly profiting from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The amount of money being stolen from the American taxpayers in Iraq is extraordinary. I mean, there's so much money unaccounted for that's going into the pockets of certain people in Iraq, either Iraqis who are just stealing it, or into the pockets of corporations like Cheney's friends at Halliburton, these huge contractors who are working there and who are, you know, controlling every aspect of what's going on there in terms of the American presence. It's just, it's unbelievable how much money is being stolen. Like there was an article in Rolling Stone about the Henry Waxman, who's the head of the House Oversight Committee, which reviews all the expenditures. And he said something like, I think one of the figures he used was like $34 billion unaccounted for in the last year that just completely disappeared, you know. But it's much worse than that. And then you take into effect the fact that, you know, the whole American military presence. I'm reading this incredible book by Chalmers Johnson. Is very, very depressing. Chalmers Johnson is a scholar, and he used to be a CIA analyst, a former Cold Warrior in his own description. And he's written three books about the American military imperialism. And the second volume is called The Sorrows of Empire, and the the subtitle is Militarism, Secrecy, and the End of the Republic. And what he talks about, which is really most people don't know in the States, is that how much of the American military presence is privatized. So whereas it all used to go through the Defense Department, well, basically almost nothing is done through the Defense Department. It's all private contractors like Halliburton or one of its subsidiaries, Brown Root, which was a famous, used to be Brown Root of Texas, and was the corporation that basically underwrote Lyndon Johnson's political career. These guys are making billions of dollars, billions. I mean, he talks about the changes in Halliburton. You know, when Cheney was defense secretary under George Bush the Elder, he was the one, he commissioned a study by Halliburton to see about privatizing provision of military services, and he gave them millions of dollars to do it, and then he gave millions more to update this report. And then in the interim, that's what's happened, is that most of they talk about this base that the American military has in Kosovo. After the Kosovo bombing, they expropriated 1,000 acres of farmland, and they built this huge military base in Kosovo. And it costs more, I think, than any military base that they have in the world. And it's all privatized. It's all run by I forget the name of the corporation, but this one corporation, to the point where I think it actually might be Kellogg Brown Root. But the point is that it's all paid for with American people's tax dollars.
Taxpayers' money. Yeah.
But it's going to these private corporations, and say there are 727 American military bases in the world. 727.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spreading democracy and freedom.
Yeah, spreading, and that's what the public end up getting on television.
Yeah,
because they kind of demonize any populist leader anywhere. They undermine, they themselves fund terrorism and in other countries, and undermine other sometimes even democratically elected figures. I mean, they did in Iran, and they did in Guatemala, was it, where they brought about the downfall of the populist leader? I mean, the Americans haven't done anything. They think they're spreading democracy. See, I grew up really believing that they did it. That's what I'm saying. I was so naive 2 years ago. I still believed this, the Hollywood version. You know, and then I realized, my God, you know, the CIA's done these criminal terrorist things around the world for the last 50 years, you know, and then you realize, oh, all the Nazis all came in and formed the CIA, and they work with the pharmaceutical companies and the oil tyrants and all these people. Like, there really is this kind of whole class of, well, they think they're illuminated. I would say they're subhuman types. People controlled by the lower centers of money, sex, and power. That's all they care for. They have no heart. They never made it to that level of human evolution. These people, they're so low and so wicked. To me, the whole thing, you know, was like I believed in justice. I believed in truth. You know, I believed the media reported things fairly. You know, and then I wake up to a nightmare and realize, oh, the psychopaths and perverts took over. They won. They did it. And they're very clever. I mean, everybody else is like sheep people, you know? And that's how they treat them. You know, they spray you from the air. Here's a dose of newest pharmaceutical or, you know, newest bioterrorist weapon that they have, and they spray it on us from the air. They, you know, in the States, they even admitted to experimenting on hundreds of thousands of people. They're allowed to by law without telling people. You know, it's like this nightmare. People wake up to American nightmare. You know, like, it's like, wow, what, we never thought we'd become this. You know? So to me, waking up this kind of level of my period of my life has been pretty traumatizing, shocking. You know, I've been through a lot, and kind of it's that whole false consciousness system. That's what I was trying to say a bit. You know, I believed all the BS I'd been taught through the educational system and the media and the politicians with all their fancy white teeth, nice clothes, and all their lies. You know, they're consummate psychopaths. They can lie and lie and lie, and they, you catch them in one lie, they lie in a different way to cover up the first lie. You know, everything's just lies. There's kind of no truth anywhere. There's no justice, you know, anywhere. I don't know. Do we have someone coming in?
Yeah. Well, you know, you actually do. If you don't mind, this is Don. I am loving your program. I love you guys. I love you so much. I'm one of the owners here, and just for your audience, I love you. And, you know, somebody phoned up the other day, and they're talking exactly about what you're talking about. They said, Don, you know, okay, now that we know, who cares? I said, what do you mean, who cares? He goes, well, it's been going on for years. You just know about it now. And I go, and I said, well, I'll tell you something. It's as unacceptable now as it was then. And now that I know about it, I'm going to do something about it, because it wouldn't be acceptable to me then. And it isn't acceptable to me now. And as far as I'm concerned, there are people out there that need to be removed from this planet physically. Okay?
They need to be brought to, there needs to be some kind of justice restored.
Well, how do you create justice when you have a criminal class of perverts really meeting out that justice, doling it out? You can't. And when you try to meet them on their own turf, they use that court system against you, because it's corrupt. The judicial and law enforcement agencies, as we all know, are about as corrupt as you can get. Heck, they're just filling the ranks of the military now with the perverted criminal class and the felons and rapists and whoever they can get their hands on, of course. It's really, it's an eye-opener, but it's totally and absolutely unacceptable. And am I desensitized? Hell no. I'm pissed off.
Yeah, good.
I'm pissed off. And if they think that that's going to be the norm, or they can even convince me into believing that this is somehow normal, then they got a whole nother thing to worry about, because I ain't buying it.
Yeah, once you wake up to the truth in a way, you can't go back.
Can't go back.
No.
It's the red pill, blue pill syndrome, folks, and I'm on a high. Give me a few more of them. Hey, I love you guys. I just want to thank you, because, you know, it's not that we have to wake anybody up anymore, because the idiots in power did that. They did that for us. You know, I kept thinking I'm a light bearer and I'm going to wake everybody up. You know what? That wasn't my job. These idiots did it so well that, I mean, my hat's off to them. All we need to do is now show them what their true power is. And here's the true power. They're the many. They have the power over what is supply, what is demand, what is going to be purchased or what won't be, what's going to be written about. Really, because remember, we're talking about the many. Who's going to be in power or not? Who's going to wrest that power from somebody else or not? We're dealing with the many. And when the many realize that they are the power, individually and collectively, I might add, then we're going to see some change. And it's really motivating these people into taking responsibility, because believe me, they're woke. You can't have this kind of criminal, murderous people that feel that they're nobility starving people around the world.
I know, that's their next one, eh? They're bringing about starvation.
Sure.
As their genocidal plan.
Sure.
Yeah.
These guys are a few thousand people, and they're murderous, and they, and we, you know, really, folks, do we know who they are?
We do. That's what's so astonishing. They have it in their own writing.
Sure, we know who they are. It's just, you know, how many of you out there are going to have the balls to stand up and say enough's enough? If you don't, well, then just lock your doors and wait till they come. It's okay. I mean, I'll love you anyways.
But I see also, Don, like, I think so many people became part of it without realizing all what they were in.
That's right.
And what we so much need is for those people to have a change of heart.
Right on.
Like to turn around and say, no, you know, although I may be making good money, my kids are being sprayed with chemtrails too.
Exactly.
My kids have cancer because of their what they're doing.
Exactly.
You know, my kids have autism because of the inoculations. My kids are suffering in their school because they live on fluoride and their nutrition is being more and more depleted. I'm being poisoned. It's not, you know, no one. We need people to turn around. Like we need the police to honor their oaths of office and the military.
You know, to expect some of these divisions to change. It's going to take us going in and fingering, literally, folks, the one or two people that have been seated into these areas of enforcement, law enforcement and criminal enforcement and judicial enforcement agencies. There's only one or two that corrupts the seed because they control the information flow. It's the few trying to bullshit the many into believing they're many more than they are, and they got and the corruption is far superior than we can address. That's not true at all.
Yeah.
This is a simple matter, and when we realize how simple it is, it'll start to get easy.
It will get really easy.
Yeah.
I envision sometimes, you know, Don, I don't think people in our societies have enough of a positive vision of what a new world would be if we hadn't had this criminal elite doing what they've done.
Truly agree.
In Canada, they have laws that you can seize the assets of anyone involved in terrorist activities. Now imagine if you really seized the assets of these criminal banksters and elitists in all these corporations who are all committing treason, mass murder, and complicity in
there
war crimes.
There should be one country
so you
that
seize all their assets, it would
it.
Pay off the debt of the United States of America.
I
it would
agree.
Pay off the debt because it's all owed to these people.
Let's all go to Venezuela and say, let's make... No, I'm serious, but if there are a few countries that band together to stop this criminal proceeding, that's definitely going to help. But Canada... You know, I've been in their political arena. I've been in their business arena. And it's such a kangaroo situation that when you get into the legalese of it all, it's so much far worse than the U.S. Even now.
Really? They're just more subtle.
Well, they're actually a little bit more bolder about it. They're bolder about it. And because it's a little more socialistic, they can be. Okay, it's.
Well, I have socialist elements in my. I like certain socialist.
I do too. Don't get me wrong, but they've used it in such a twist. In such a twist, right? It doesn't.
Yeah.
The regime. I don't give a damn. Give me a good dictator. I don't care if it's what regime it is, from capitalism, communism, if it's democracy or a dictatorship, or who cares? It's the people that make it happen. If it's a good person, benevolent, and they're behind it, fine. Because all this spin on the different regimes and political regimes is just enough to keep you tantalized. And it's a game that keeps you going on and on. It's always the people. It's the rest is dust. It's these people that are in the power, in these seats, that need to be removed. And the regime will change almost magically.
Yeah, I can just see it. They could be just, like as Ron Paul says, revolution.
Revolution.
You know, the new American Revolution. I mean, it's happening.
It's happening.
Someone said the revolution won't be on TV. It's not on TV.
We'll never get to TV until we get rid of this media circumstance.
Well, I mean, I think the media will let more and more out over time as they realize
I
that
don't,
they're all subject
I don't.
To
Look
Nuremberg
at, no,
standards. They can't
no,
just say we,
no,
knew
they're
what,
keep
we didn't
going.
Know what we were doing.
I doubt it. They're going to keep going. They got so much invested in this, and you're looking at MySpace, dig.com, and look at when you go to YouTube, who do they promote? MySpace, Facebook, and Dig. Now, who are the ones that we all love to hate, including AOL? We can throw them and a few others in there, but I mean the really hateable ones. And so when you look at the concerted effort where they're combining, if you look at now the YouTube templates, I just noticed this. Go look at the YouTube profile templates, and they're borrowing that, as far as I can see, almost identical from MySpace. Whoa! So, you know, I mean, I'm in this a little bit, and I see what's going on, and I see that they're trying to really establish a very tight end control over the media portion of the internet. We know what's going on. It's going to fail. Just all of you bad boys, get yourselves into some good circles so that we can identify you all as groups. That would make it easier for us.
Yeah, put your names on the North American Union
document.
You know, meet
Thank
together
you.
So
right
we
on.
Put you there. We have Henry Kissinger coming to Montreal next month in May. You know,
I bet
May
you guys are just
something.
Excited about that one, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Him and all a bunch of other the criminal, you know, they have all these fraud organizations, think tanks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and they got all those fraud guys coming up and their propaganda, you know.
Yeah, but their brains are slowing down and the rest of them are speeding up. Isn't that a beautiful consequence to this all? I mean, you gotta love what comes around. Once they've sent it out there, now it's gonna come back full circle. That's why I'm so darn happy, because look, here's the beauty. It's not like they're secret in a little cubby hole on the left side of of a mountain. They're screwing up the world at a clip that makes a speed racer look slow, and they're doing it on such a global scale. Now they got everybody chipping away at them. Everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I couldn't have done it better myself. So the arrogance of their world plot for control and domination is really coming back, and it's coming back globally speaking, I might add.
That's the title of Chalmers Johnson's latest book. It's the third in his trilogy of it's called Nemesis, and what he points out is that you can have an empire and you can have a domestic democracy, but you can't have both. And the United States is basically in the same position as the Roman Republic, in the sense that it's reached the point where it's pissing so many people off globally that this whole thing is going to collapse.
Yeah.
And it can collapse one of two ways. Either can give up the empire, as he says the British did after the Second World War, you know, not in the best way all the times, but basically they made a decision that realized that they couldn't maintain their empire and preserve their democracy, or you can have a domestic dictatorship which maintains the empire. So
they're going to try it here in the U.S. Establishing their base here. They're not running offshore to Australia, the U.K., or anywhere else, or China. They're establishing here in our underground bases. They really are. And they're establishing
over 150 of them, even. Like,
and they're hiding in plain sight underneath us in various areas, because these guys are criminals throughout the world. You think many countries are going to allow them throughout the world? No, they're right here. They're safe. Hell, the American people won't touch them. I mean that, you know, because we aren't touching them yet, but just if they stick around long enough, we'll get our hands on them.
Going to be hard to know what's going to happen. I mean, I see us under imminent threat of the escalation of the bombing of Iran.
I see a peaceful. They're going to try to walk away peacefully, I think, after they create enough havoc and enough people, enough action takers see that enough non-action takers are out there screaming loudly. The action takers are going to step forward because they got enough backing. You're seeing that in whistleblowers. You're seeing that in UFOs. You're seeing that in information, 9/11. You're going to continue to see more and more action takers, because they're going to feel braver and braver, and there are many of them out there haven't taken action. They're going to step to the plate, start taking action. Now, when that occurs, I think that, they're going to try to slowly slither away and maybe keep their power from the sidelines. But I think this point, it's going to lead to a peaceful change. And if they don't go quietly, it's going to lead to shootings. They're going to be drug out on the streets. They're going to be shot. Their families will be murdered. And anybody associated with these murderous perverts will be taken out of commission forever. That's how heated people are throughout the world. That's why
really,
these people need the biggest military, private military bunch of thugs protecting them. Because they have the world now looking at them, causing all the terrorism and all the problems. And too many people are wise enough. And so what they're going to receive is exactly what they're going to, what they're dishing out. Now, they might not receive it all in this lifetime, but it's kind of like a good dose of supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Takes a while to get it all down.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I think that they may go the other way. I mean, they've got all their exercises going on this week.
Sure, they're already.
I
think they're looking to set more off-sea charges, charges and sonar and frequency. I mean, I don't quite understand it, but when you got a lot of dying, sure, you got a lot of sea animals dying off the coastlines. You had the military coming out there on the coastlines that they were doing those military drills. Then the undersea cables were cut. Then the ferries, these terrorists were taking over the Oregon ferry. Right, and now we've got the whole West Coast port system shut down.
Well, the dock workers shut it down to protest the war in Iraq.
Yeah, I love all that, but when it's
that
large along an entire seaboard with union members and the control and the seating of those situations that I've been privy to, I can tell you that I don't know. The coincidences are a little more than I like, considering the type of activity we're seeing is rather bizarre, earthquake-wise.
Yeah.
And I think that, I think they're going to try maybe a last-ditch effort to make a man-made catastrophe look natural. It's the only thing they got, or these people are going to walk out of an administration, and we're going to get rid of all the criminals, the few weaklings that are left, and we're going to bring them to the gallows. Now, I don't know if they can allow that truth to progress. I think that America is a viper's den for them, and I personally believe that the West Coast freedom-loving, westward hoe-believing, the only West there is left, I think, are in danger. And I think they're in danger of very sick, whacked-out people trying to make things look like they different than what they actually are. And I believe that that's part of this ongoing fiasco, especially considering Blackwater can't get its grip in California.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, they wouldn't let him in here, and a lot of the fluoridation of the water has stopped. Well, according to some of the representatives, but
you know what's interesting in just in the whole big picture of things in terms of like the question is, well, what can I do? I mean, that's ultimately right. I mean, as you say, these things aren't hidden. I mean, these guys are pretty much out front about
what they're doing.
And yeah, they bullshit about why they're doing it, but I mean, essentially they're very obvious, and we know who they are and what they're doing, basically. Anybody who can read can figure this out. But the question is, what do you do about it? And in a sense, I kind of think like, well, this has been going on forever. It's just the latest, greatest version of a very bad story. But on the other hand, this is against my nature to be optimistic, but I kind of think back to during the 50s, in the early 60s, the civil rights movement in the South. Now, you read those histories and you read what those people went through, and they were nonviolent, and they took on essentially terrorist states. You know, if you were black and you were living in Mississippi, you were living in a terrorist state, and you had no rights, legal rights, and you had no factual rights. I mean, you could be taken out and lynched or murdered and thrown in the nearest river if you stood up and said, I'm not going to take this anymore. And yet people got together, and the strength of an idea started to spread throughout the entire South. And, people got beaten and people got murdered and little kids got blown up in churches. But eventually things changed, And I mean, the same thing with Gandhi in India. I mean, he took on the British Empire.
it's going to have to change.
Non-violently, but he took it on with an idea. And
exactly.
I mean, so again and again, you see like that's where I think like the network of people and in a sense, despite all the problems with the Internet is a great equalizer in terms of freedom of information and as an alternative to the network lies and the major media are just full of lies and misrepresentations.
I agree. I think cover stories.
Yeah, forums like this, I mean, the fact that we can talk on here and somebody could be listening to us in Sydney, Australia, or Tanzania, or London, England, that kind of collapses the barriers of time and space, and then that there's a real opportunity there.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
because
for a while.
They're really starting to streamline data. In other words, they're starting to skew the perception of the public by way of all, like you guys were talking about, views, tallies. All public perception is being skewed. And that skew will continue throughout the major media, whether only a few percent of the people are watching them or not, because they're in every home on your TV. You see, that's the thing. They really still have that illusion that they can fall back on to say we're large when they're not. And that will carry them for a while longer. But those who are complicit, and it'll carry them for a while longer, but those who are complicit will be brought to justice, and I think it'll be a peaceful revolution unless these murderous perverts don't go peacefully. Then I think there's going to be a lot of blood.
I think we're going to face a larger war before that. I mean, with the Iran war, I think that, or... Like, I don't know, Jim, if you're familiar with what Don was mentioning in reference to these all this seismic activity through Nevada and up the coast, eh?
No.
It looks like there's a considerable concern at the moment there might be a major earthquake.
Well, Senator Baxter just put out, was Senator Baxter put out a news release three or four days ago that said, big warning alert, tsunami may happen, and then many in the media, Mitch Bastros, I believe his name is, with Earth Changes Media, many others, the big one could be here, it's coming, and now the ports are shut down. And to me, again, folks, I mean, I look at everything now that comes out of major media and the government as a lie. I want to know what their plan is for doing this, and you can usually connect the dots better that way. Now, you might be wrong every now and again, but you'll be right more often than taking what they're telling you on faith.
Yeah, watching what they are telling you can often help you anticipate what's to come.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, you see them now, they're beating the drums, why they have to attack Iran. That's the newest thing, and so they want to kind of
oil.
Have some
McCain
new...
just admitted it. He admitted it on Hardball, I believe it was. Chris, whatever. His...
Yeah, did he?
Yeah. Well, anyways,
who said that? Who admitted it?
John McCain said, yeah, we were in there for oil, and this is going to ensure that future generations of America never have to worry about it again.
Yeah.
Like... What?
Yeah, well, like, let's...
And he's,
well,
the, and he's the main guy on our two-party system?
Yeah,
holy
smacks! This is the best you can do?
And it's so ironic also, Don, because, like, some of the things I've recently learned, like, they're realizing now that oil is they think that it's produced through a chemical process in the earth.
Sure.
That
well,
it
yeah.
isn't a non-renewable resource. And they have huge, huge deposits in North and South Dakota, off the coast of Alaska.
I've been in the oil business for 4 years. They were capping them the entire time I was in business. The biggest wells were all being capped, and fields and domes, and you have no idea, buying it up like crazy. I knew some of the geologists behind the big firms that were doing it. Folks, it's all
so the whole
a lie.
From the very beginning, there's lots of oil. It's
lots
just
it.
They wanted to use it to imprison us.
That's
part
right.
of their scheme of how to gain control.
Part of the scheme.
Well, I don't think it's to imprison us. It's to make money. I mean,
money isn't
never,
it. It's
under,
not about the
under,
money because they put the system of money in place to gain the control. Remember, a pervert.
Yeah, but never underestimate that money motivates people. Follow the money and you'll self-made mistake.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to. A lot of the stuff you say, Chris, is like you see as a conspiracy to imprison us. Listen, These guys don't want us in prison. They want to fleece us.
They want to rape us. They want to rape our young women. They want all the glory. They want all the power. They're pervert.
Well, but Noam Chomsky has it, I think, right when he says that really the role of the American people in all of this is to pay for it. Exactly. It's with their tax dollars. It's with their hard work.
They put that out. We would, you know, they say, oh, but we want you to pay for it. Now you're going to pay for it. And the American people, you're going to pay for us to rape you. Yeah, I love the Illuminati putting out that bullshit. You know,
yeah.
I got to tell you, we don't willingly pay for any of this. And when we and when that stops, that all those funds that have been used in this kind of a manner will be redirected.
It should all be seized by the people of America.
That's
it
right.
would pay off your national debt.
That's right.
It really would. You would have such wealth in America to rebuild the infrastructure of America. You take all the money back and bring your troops home from around the world. And just start rebuilding your own society, you can have a utopian society. The whole thing can be turned around. It really can. You've had such wealth that they have this scarcity consciousness. They think the world can only, the Club of Rome at one point thought it could support like 4 billion or something like that. And they have this scarcity consciousness that they're using to imprison us. There's not going to be enough food, and now Monsanto is just intentionally destroying the food supply.
Oh,
for all these genetically modified poisons.
Well, look at the pharmacies. I mean, I won't allow an aspirin, a Bayer, or any type of drug in my house. I've never had insurances, and I will not feed the medical mafia. And I'll tell you, this when companies like that are intentionally poisoning people throughout the world, and they've already shown that by their shipments, by the fibers on the vials at Merck, by the contamination, by the AIDS-laden shots that were shipped all off seas. These guys, this medical profession is not a healthy one.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, the Rockefellers took over the medical education system and
right.
just brought up a whole generation of doctors who you know, just turned to the pharmaceuticals and that's what they do. I mean, the emergency medicine's highly advanced, but the pharmaceutical side of it is tragic. And to think it's been done intentionally, like you think of how many American soldiers were given poisonous inoculations and experimented on with inoculations before the Gulf War and then more recently.
And the strange, I agree. And the strange part is it isn't many people that know about this. There are people that work at these plants that are working day in and day out that really don't know, but now they're wary. And they're waking up, and there's only a few people in these seated. Remember, guys, you're only looking at maybe a few thousand. Throughout the world, you've got a few bad seeds in various corporate entities and various enforcement agencies, and these people can be singled out and hung. I'm gonna repeat myself.
Well, I don't think we should. I don't think they should be hung.
Well, I got to tell you, when a murderous pervert. Has designs of killing its own citizens, genocide, which is properly, aptly named, and killing innocent people abroad. And if they are complicit in that, yes, I believe they should be hung. Now, if they're murdering our children by poisoning our medications and they're complicit in that, they should be hung. I have a lot of reasons for hanging people. And most of them deal with murderous actions. I got to tell you, I don't like to cloud the issue. I'm not a guy who says, okay, well, we can let it go. Maybe he should live. Well, the guy's murdering my children, other people's children. He's going to keep doing it.
It's tragic.
Well, it's not tragic if we remove it. You know, it's kind of, it's only tragic for as long as it stays. How's that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's tragic what's been done. I mean, you know, there are 1.2 million people murdered in Iraq now. The whole thing was a lie. And
it's
a lie to
murder innocent people and to take their resources. That's it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and you know, there are 3 million people who are homeless and refugees, and they've polluted a land with 300,000 times as much depleted uranium as used on Japan.
Exactly.
And in Iraq has a half-life of over a billion years.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What the desecration of the earth, the whole new farce they've got with the global warming. It's this whole thing.
Oh no, they've got a new word for it now. They've got a new word for it now.
What's that?
It's much more dangerous. Climate change.
Climate change. Oh yeah. Well, they're bound to get it right one way or the other. You know.
I mean, we got global warming and climate change, and we got to do something about it now. Well, you know, that's so boring. That's so.
The indices show a cooling trend, so now they gotta go, oops. I heard the other day they want to remove oxygen from the air or something like that.
Insane people.
Oh no, they're gonna start spraying us with sulfur and glass particles now to reflect the sunlight. That's just gonna be great for the people whose lungs, you know, your kids out playing in the yard.
Oh sure, you ever, I mean, they talk about glass in the lungs, boy, if you ever met people or heard horror stories about that, glass in the lungs, wow.
I mean, I feel so sorry for the 9/11 responders. I mean, talk about another tragedy, you know. These people want to get Wall Street going the next day, so they send all the emergency workers in knowing that the air is so polluted.
Yeah.
And then they try to get weasel their way out of paying the medical expenses for these people.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing is just so, it's unbelievable.
It stinks. It stinks.
It stinks, yeah. It's a story that's way beyond any novelist's wildest imagination, it's all true.
And it's all true. Isn't that a mind blower? For all you people who thought the conspiracy theorists were nutcases, well, you know, they just might have been the light workers, because I got to tell you, it's way beyond what you even hear probably on our network, because most of it still isn't hiding. You remember, these guys got a lot of secrets yet to come out, and just be ready for them, because they won't be pleasant.
No.
I love you guys. I'm going to let you finish. I mean, I just had to chime in, because when you guys are talking, my passion just...
Thanks for coming in and joining us. You and I share much more similar view than Jim has a different view, I think, a lot, and not seeing it as the conspiracy that I think we see, how we see it, is that there is indeed this criminal elite
everybody sees it. Everybody. Everybody I talk to, everywhere I go, taxi cab.
Up here, people are so much more asleep. My son's in the army. I'm horrified, and he got so mad at me because of things I did publicly, you know, calling our government traitors and that they're committing treason and things like that. He thinks he's going to Afghanistan to fight for democracy. And I'm trying to like persuade him, you're in the forces controlled by the people who did 9/11. You know, Osama bin Laden and his 10 reindeer didn't take down the two towers.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, I got Canadians phoning me up, Australians. I've got people from all over the world phoning me up, telling me exactly what I already know in most cases, and a lot of what I don't, but people are aware. They're awoke. I mean, there might be a few pockets here and there that still rely on their boob tube, mainstream media, and a few other things. But the global consciousness must have been a factor in this, because it's almost like osmosis now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Rupert Sheldrake's. He calls them morphogenic fields. As information, as certain people have experiences of it, it's like we're connected at these mind field levels, so it helps the collective to awaken.
Yes.
When we reach that critical mass of us warriors trying to bring forth the truth and the light there,
yes.
Don. Thanks, Don.
I love you guys.
Love you, Don.
Thank you.
Hope to get to California. I'm too afraid of coming to the state. I am. You know, doing this show, I wonder sometimes, you know.
You'll have a headache. They always, you know, they like to make it difficult. That's just because they're, what do you say?
Well, I mean, they must be scared now. I mean,
they are. They're so scared that, and that's why they got to make it look like that's why they got to desensitize you, and that's why they got to look like it's been going on before, and that it's acceptable to a few. It's acceptable to nobody. Sorry, guys, you're not winning that battle. There is no acceptance here or anywhere that I see. Anyways, love you guys.
Just got to take back America.
Amen.
Yeah. Amen. May the will of God be done. Take back America. Well, it's encouraging to hear from Don, like how much he sees that awakening. I don't see that among people I know in Canada.
I don't.
Jim?
I don't see that. Yeah. I don't hear that.
Yeah, I think Don really sees the situation more similarly. I wanted to hear your response to that. Like, I know we've been. I remember you couldn't believe. Well, why would they spray us with chemtrails? You know. Go on Google. There's all kinds of videos of all their chemtrail spraying and
I'm not saying that people don't spray things. I'm just saying that I don't see everything as being a plot to enslave people. Or like you say, I think the elites exploit people, plain and simple. They always have, always will, you know. And never underestimate the power of money, you know. Like, I mean, yeah, there's a small group of people who control things in the world. There's no question about that.
But it's like this one fellow says in the Alex Jones movie Endgame, which exposes the Bilderberg groups. And the guy says, these guys don't want money. They got all the money they could possibly want. They want power. They want to enslave people.
But they go hand in hand. Well, I question that. Like, as I say, it's the oldest story in a book. It's been going on for, you know, thousands of years. I mean, see, like, for me, like, my whole point is the view is quite different from in the sense that I'm not disillusioned by any of this. I'm kind of disillusioned by 9/11. But, like I say, if you go through the Vietnam War with any kind of open mind about what was going on, I mean, this is just basically a replay of what happened then. You know, the American government does something that's completely criminal and then lies about it, and then the media.
Well, I think now
it's exactly the same.
I see it as very different because this is on a whole different scale, because this. And their schemes, like, they write this up. Like, it's all these Rockefeller groups and all their think tanks. They write it up. They actually want Henry Kissinger was head of this program. That they want population reduction. And it's called non-lethal warfare. They induce sickness by spraying people with chemicals, by the fluoride in the water, by the poisons in the inoculations. They know it. It's just different separate guys. It's a whole scheme that's part of their scheme. It really is. We see that very different.
Do they drink water and breathe the air? I mean, they're poisoning themselves. I mean, you know, there's more people alive on the planet than there ever have been. People's life expectancy is longer than it ever has been. I mean, there's all sorts of statistics that would sort of dispute that. I mean, you know, you were talking about starvation. Crazy, you know, like I said, on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, I sent an email out to people reminding them that 42 million people had starved to death, you know, in the 5 years since 9/11. 42 million.
Wow, isn't that disgraceful?
Most of them children. And somebody wrote back to me and said, you're wrong. It's 48 million, you know, like, whatever.
Wow.
It's a lot. And so probably since 9/11.
But those things
so probably
are
like
part
70
of the...
million people have starved to death since 9/11, you know, or 80 million. I don't know what the figure is now.
But those things
are
part of the same scheme. It's the same people. It's these global elites who have impoverished third world countries.
No, No, they exploit them, but I mean that's just a side effect. I mean, it's like, you know, if they could make more money and have more power by keeping people alive, they would. But I mean, the whole world is like that. I mean, everybody's implicated in terms of starvation. We could have stopped global starvation 50, 60 years ago. There's no question that we could stop it. There's enough food. There's enough resources. I mean, it's because people don't really care. I mean, people don't take action that this is allowed to happen. It happens under a certain inertia. I mean, you know, like the whole AIDS epidemic in Africa was a perfect example. You know, that could have been nipped in
the bud.
Do we
have a caller or someone coming in?
Hello?
Was it? Hello?
Yep.
Yeah, hi. It's Phil calling from Montreal.
Oh, hi, Phil. Good. Montreal.
How are you?
You got Henry Kissinger coming to town.
Well,
did you know that?
That'll no doubt be a thrill for someone else.
Yeah, hi, Phil. What would you like to comment? Or
just, I'd like to just comment on a couple of things, actually. You may recall I called you some months ago. We were talking about, I gave you a little analogy regarding the nature of consciousness and how to explain to people that it's not in the head, and to refer to the metaphor of a television set and how the programming comes from outside the circuitry of a television set. I also spoke about Rodney Collins's book, Theory of Celestial Influence, and my general awareness of a lot of Gurdjieff material and, you know, O. Uspensky as related by Rodney Collins and stuff like that. I just want to put in a bit of an opinion. You yourself, 2 weeks ago, Chris, at the end of the show, kind of realized that your show has gotten a little bit, I would say, off track in dealing rather excessively with all this 9/11 stuff and, you know, the general, you know, what you've spent the last hour and a half discussing again this week. And I just want to sort of state for the record that I tune into your show to hear more about the Blavatsky material and Gurdjieff and Uspensky and all these people and all of these ideas. And as you started today, the nature in particular of consciousness.
Yeah.
So, but just to sort of give some sort of a segue from what you've been talking about, I do think that nowadays, there are, you know, I listen to Alex Jones quite regularly, and I tune into Alex for facts rather than interpretations. And in fact, when I tune in to any shows, even yours, you know, I'm tuning in to be given facts, and I do my own interpreting.
Yeah.
Now, I find that in recent years, especially since the, you know, 9/11, there's a... We have an unhealthy, we have a wicked combination here of jadedness and cynicism combining, you know, with some sort of newfound ability at critical thinking, when in fact most people are not very good at critical thinking. They don't know much science. Science education is at probably what should be thought of as an all-time low, considering what we do know now in science.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of things going on. You know, we even have the CERN experiment coming up, the possibility of mini black holes to be generated by these collisions. And they wave their hands, you know, and say, oh, don't worry, these little black holes will evaporate because Stephen Hawking says so, when in fact evaporation has never been observed. We've never even observed the near to the event horizon of a black hole, even though we have pictures of black holes from a distance. And the whole undiscovered theory of quantum gravity will be discovered precisely to elucidate the goings on near these event horizons. And so there's no basis for where the, you know, where the security of the planet is possibly at stake to be dismissing rather smugly, in recent writings that I've read, dismissing rather smugly the potential risk of this experiment.
Yeah.
Now, I appreciate you guys letting me go on and on like this. I've got more to say, but maybe you'd like to throw something in at this point.
The experiment that they've actually held it up in the court proceeding, eh?
Well,
you know,
I don't know if they successfully held it up. There's a challenge coming out of Hawaii, but the thing is that they have gone out of their way in their own mind to review the safety of this thing. And again, on the issue of many black holes, their ultimate defense is this concept of Hawking radiation evaporating a black hole. Now, I'd like to tell you, I know some physics, by the way, and I'd like to tell you why that whole idea is flawed, if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
But that
they will evaporate?
Well, here's the idea,
okay? You say that's flawed?
Yes, it is flawed, and I'll explain
please
concisely as follows. First, near an event horizon of a black hole, first, the one thing we believe we know about black holes, everybody knows this, that a black hole is something that has such gravity that nothing can escape, not even light, right? And light is the thing
which
is...
Well, that's the older idea of the black hole. The newer idea in holographic physics is that information can come out.
Well, you are now talking about what would probably be part of a correct quantum gravity theory, but orthodox science is not there yet. Okay?
Yeah, well, that idea is in science now, because they now think that black holes, well, they believe in Hawking radiation, but that's different than the newer theories, which say... as because of the loss of entropy, as a material energetic system collapses to a black hole, you have a loss of entropy, so that has to be balanced by the outpouring of information, which they think then creates that entropy to balance the loss of entropy from the collapse.
Yeah, well, again, this is Hawking's reasoning as to why black holes should in fact radiate what's called Hawking radiation.
Yeah.
And that black holes ultimately have a temperature, and they must therefore leak, in some sense, radiation. And this has also been called the information loss problem or the information paradox.
Okay.
And
you're
quite right in the way you sort of summarize the situation. But unfortunately, they still don't really know.
No.
The calculations of entropy and such, you know, were done by this researcher called Bekenstein, and it's all pretty nailed down. And I have no dispute. I have no dispute with Hawking radiation. Hawking evaporation, however, is a different matter because, what Hawking radiation is, and this is what I was starting to say, as you get near the event horizon of a black hole, there is the formation of particle antiparticle pairs, which is matter-antimatter pairs, okay?
Yeah.
And normally, in the bubbling froth of flat space-time, these little pairs are produced, you know, virtual particles are called, they're produced, but they disappear again. But near an event horizon, they are formed, and they survive. They are injected into the goings-on near the event horizon. And the idea is that Hawking radiation is that one of these components, the matter component, escapes as normal radiation, but the antimatter component goes into the black hole and meets up with some previously accreted particle of matter and annihilates it in a matter-antimatter annihilation. This is called pair annihilation. Now, and that produces a photon. Now, they give no explanation. And this is the supposed mechanism for evaporating the infinite mass at the core of a black hole. But they give no explanation how it is that photon can suddenly magically escape from the singularity when the very definition of singularity is that no
light
such...
Light can't escape.
Okay. Pardon me?
Yeah, that light can't escape.
Right.
Yeah.
So obviously, if they want to cling to some sort of an evaporation mechanism, the only hope is to say that pair annihilation occurs, but it's occurring to matter that was sort of already on its way to being accreted and has not yet been fully accreted by the singularity. And it's only the fully accreted matter, shall we say, which contributes to the irreducible curvature of space-time or gravity, if you will, that this singularity produces. So they're waving their hands. They have not given a coherent explanation of how it is that the core of a black hole, namely the singularity, a region of supposed infinite energy and density, how that evaporates at all. Okay, so it's all hand waving, and that is my argument why I'm reminded of the movie Trading Places, you know, where these two with Dan Aykroyd and
Eddie Murphy,
thank you. And on a $1 bet, you know, they caused Dan Aykroyd to lose his stock brokerage high and mighty livelihood and give it all to Eddie Murphy. But that, you know, at the end of the movie, they turn the tables on these guys and formally hand over, you know, pay off the $1 bet to each other. So I see, you know, a headline in our future where they say, you know, oh, well, turns out that Hawking paid Kip Thorne, you know, $1 because it turns out he was wrong about evaporation. It's just too bad the Earth will have to be destroyed as a result,
yeah.
You know?
And a subscription to Hustler, I think, too.
Yeah, I remember that.
If they had some sort of bet about
bet.
About the expansion coefficient or something, you know, something to that effect. But I'm reminded of what happened when the first atomic bomb. I wasn't aware of this situation. That thank you, Phil, for phoning and bringing this up, because it reminds me of when the first atomic bomb was exploded, and the great unknown question was, once the chain reaction starts, will it stop? Or will it just destroy the entire universe? And to the reason that they went ahead and did it and believed that the chain reaction would stop was because Enrico Fermi said so.
If I may,
his equations apparently, oh, you know, he's always right. So it's a sort of a similar situation.
Yeah. Actually, if I may just correct you on the facts there for the benefit of the audience.
Sure.
I'm very familiar with, as I say, physics.
Okay.
The concern was that the atmosphere would be ignited.
Right.
And
okay.
It was calculations by Teller who...
Oh, I thought it was... Okay, Fermi, but Teller, okay.
Yeah, it was calculations by Teller that kind of finally convinced everybody that, no, you know, that that the atmosphere, in fact, won't get ignited. But it was calculations, and I still think that that is much more reliable, in fact, than the hand-waving that Dr. Hawking is doing, you know?
Wow.
And by the way, I'm not alone in doubting the, this is a thought experiment, you know, and the thought experiment that Hawking made to come up with evaporation is just that. It's a thought experiment, and it violates the very definition, you know, it violates certain definitions that are worrisome. And therefore, I don't know. You know, it's a concern.
It certainly shows a certain attitude they have, the kind of willingness to pose these risks to humankind, just on to test out their favorite theory.
Yeah. Well, not just test, but explore. And this is the thing: they're mucking around with the very nature of space-time in order to, quite admittedly, explore the nature of space-time, you know, so
yeah,
so that's kind of the problem. I'm sure you're both familiar with, here's another concern, a parallel concern that I have to this issue, which is you're no doubt both familiar with the work years ago Sleeping Prophet, Edgar Cayce.
Yes.
And you recall that Edgar Cayce had a prediction, a prophecy, would have a reading, which involved basically a pole shift, a physical rolling of the mantle, you know, not a magnetic shift, but a physical shift. And he had a whole, you know, he has this revised map of North America and Mississippi running backwards and all that stuff. And he's not alone to be seeing maps like this. I believe there's a guy named Stan Deo and others who sort of have had the same. And Cayce's timeline for this event was like the late 80s or so. And Cayce has been very correct on a number of issues and readings and such. And there's puzzlement in those that research these matters about why Cayce was so wrong on this. And I think what the answer is to that is we ducked a bullet when the superconducting supercollider was canceled back in the late 80s or early 90s or whenever it was.
And that delayed, like,
and,
that.
And that basically eliminate that, that changed the outcome of that prophecy if we make the leap that these excessively high collisions, because here's what's going on when you collide heavy ions, you know, you've got particles at 99.9996 times 99, the speed of light. You're smashing them together, and you're converting kinetic energy and mass into just basically, for a split second, pure energy density. And pure energy density is what Einstein says is equivalent to curvature, to gravity. And so that collision produces, a, shall we say, a gravitational pulse, or a little spike, a little, or a big spike in the local curvature of space-time. And they've got huge multi-million-dollar laser experiments looking and looking for gravity waves, so they definitely believe in gravity waves. So my thinking was, well, what if that pulse on the surface of the planet creates a resonance with some deep layer of the Earth, within the Earth, you know, where the pressures and densities are such that there's a harmonic, you know, there's a resonance.
Yeah, a harmonic, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that little shell starts to ring like a bell deep inside the Earth, triggering earthquakes and what have you all over, which we know, just from the tsunami, which we know can affect the axis of the planet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Therefore, what's going on, maybe it's this high-energy superconducting super collider, and now the CERN experiment, maybe there's... you know, psychic rumblings of these events, and maybe that's the link. You know, maybe that's the key to the upcoming disasters that everybody worries about. What happens if, by the way, a black hole is formed in that experiment? It escapes their confinement because it gobbles everything up, including magnetic energy, which is what's used to confine such things. And gravity yanks it and starts to pendulum down through the Earth and then pendulum back up and pendulum back down and orbiting the center of the Earth, but in a decaying orbit as it acquires mass and obstacles and gobbles up things and eventually parks at the center of the Earth and just keeps gobbling. Now, how long will it take for that to destroy the planet? Would it be maybe 4 years, you know, to 2012?
Or a micron of a second. You don't know.
You know,
I mean,
so
well, thanks, Phil. Now I'm really scared.
And what else? You know, I
that's very interesting.
One quick thing about the 9/11 movement and Alex Jones's work and such. I don't think there's anything to be gained by people, you know, standing on street corners and trying to convince other citizens that, yeah, it was a conspiracy, and, you know, they rigged the towers with bombs and this and that, which I find a little bit of a stretch.
Oh, you've never looked at the videos of it, haven't you? Or have you?
The videos of what, the planes?
No, all the documentaries on 9/11.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
to
yeah.
Me,
I've
in
seen,
my mind,
yeah,
there's
yeah,
no
I've
doubt
seen.
Anymore that it wasn't what we were told.
Well,
I mean, how it was done, I can't...
Yeah, I don't want to get into it with you because there's just so many issues,
okay.
You know, but I just want to say that I think just the general point that, okay, assume that's correct. Assume everything they say is correct. Who are they going to throw in jail? No one. There's no way you're going to find any evidence to throw anyone in jail. Why do people stand on street corners and try to persuade other citizens of something like this? Why not stand on street corners and try to convince other citizens that there was a guy on the grassy knoll? Who cares? This is the past. I think that the healthy thing about Alex Jones's work and any other discussions like this is the scrutiny we must now bring to bear on the American government and any other government, because what's going on in particular south of the border here is we have a theocratic police state in its larval stages, okay? Mm-hmm. And the spectacle of the candidates answering questions on CNN, like what's your favorite Bible verse, and being given these trick seminary questions, you know, like you got a train coming down a track with five people and you can steer that train down another track where there's just one person, you know, There is the Founding Fathers, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. I don't know where it is, but there's a line in there which I only learned of, you know, a year or two ago. I knew about separation of church and state, but I hadn't heard this one thing, which is, there shall be no religious test for elected office. So all these such questions and discussions involving religion are unconstitutional or at least a violation of the Bill of Rights. And in parallel to that, there's another Founding Father expression. I think it was Ben Franklin who said, those who exchange freedom for security shall have neither. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
another thing that's going on.
Yeah.
And
As you say, I mean, I do think, in a way, 9/11, in a sense, is a moot point. Like, there's so much other criminality, so much else going on, in a way, you don't even need to go that far. But at the same time, I think that it's the key smoking gun that can help people see the criminality of the whole system.
But that's just it. We don't have the smoking gun. There's no particular
But
individual.
We have 9/11. There's the smoking gun. You can't possibly need more. There's so overwhelming criminal evidence from that you could you could easily prosecute these people and incarcerate them for life.
Who?
Sorry?
Who would you prosecute?
Well, I mean, I don't want to go name them all on air, but the obvious people who were behind it. I mean, begin locally, Silverstein and the people in the government, the White House, and
maybe
you begin
there is
with
evidence.
The people obviously implicated.
No,
you know,
maybe you uncover
the whole thing, and you come to the Bilderbergs and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the banking community and all their other illegal things. There's so much evidence. There's overwhelming evidence against all of these people. The chemtrails, there's so much evidence for chemtrails, fluoridation of the water, all these poisons in the inoculations. There's tons of evidence for all of this.
Well,
I can't see how you think there's no evidence.
No, I didn't say there's no evidence. I said that there's no, evidence that would stand up in court to convict someone.
Oh, and I completely disagree. I think there's overwhelming. The problem is there's no legitimate police services because they've all become corrupted, and the judiciary is corrupted. So in a way, people are powerless because they actually own the whole system.
But these are sweeping statements which cannot possibly be 100% accurate because...
They're either completely accurate or completely inaccurate.
No, but...
But, take, for instance, how can you think the RCMP and CSIS don't know that 9/11 was an inside job? Like, it's so obvious. It's so obvious. How can anyone not realize it if you've looked at the evidences?
Well,
if you just watch TV, you could not know it.
Well, I don't, as I said at the beginning of this call, I don't confuse facts with interpretations, and therefore, you know, there's a lot of people making a lot of interpretations about what they call evidence, and again, like if you take it, well, I don't, there's just too many for us to get into it here, you know, and I respect your position on this because it's mirrored by many, many people, and I can't claim to have examined all the evidence, okay? I have an opinion, and my opinion is I think there's a lot of wasted time going on here with chasing quarries you'll never catch, and a more productive use of time is to focus on where we go from here, from today, and that, so what if we throw someone in jail for 9/11? Okay, what are we going to do the next day? You know, the next day is we're going to worry about the security of our future because we have a police state south of the border rapidly forming. We have the Patriot Act. I can't even travel to the United States right now because I don't happen to have a passport. And frankly, I don't even want to travel to the United States because I refuse to travel to police states. And that's what it feels like. You know, you just have to look at the Patriot Act and this other bill called National Security Act 51 and Homeland mm-hmm. Security Act 20. Those three are enough to convince me that it's an incipient police state and furthermore a theocratically based one by the looks of it, the way things are going. And, I think that we got to be productive. We're converting food into fuel, and they're converting an energy problem into a food problem.
I know.
For nothing.
I know the ethanol scam is so terrible. Well, meanwhile, they have huge oil reserves, and also they've suppressed all the energy inventions that would reduce gas consumption. When
I
was
saw
in New
a movie
Zealand,
the other day. I saw this
sorry?
Movie, Who Killed the Electric Car?
Oh, yeah,
seen
I've seen that.
That, I want to boycott GM and Texaco into non-existence. We need to make an example of one of these multi-mega corporations. Not just a one-week boycott. Stop buying GM. Stop buying Texaco. Make do with all the competition, okay? We can do
that. Yeah, it's funny. See, there's how we differ, because I feel that these people have done such extensive criminal things that have adversely affected so many millions of people that they need to be charged for their criminal activities. I don't think you can just, and just boycott them for a day. We've got to look at the history of their crimes.
But there's no crime on the books called Crime Against Civilization. You know, we think smaller than that.
Well, there is. There's environmental crimes. There's crimes
But it's kind of funny because, I mean, on a certain level, Chris, you're saying that these people do all these things and they control all these things. So, I kind of fall somewhere between you and Phil. Like, in a sense, if they're so omnipotent, how are you ever going to try them? Where are you going to? What court are you going to try them in? I mean, in a way, I would say. How do you do that? And that's what I'm skeptical about. I mean, I would say, like, you have to act on smaller, specific issues. Something like Phil's suggesting is, okay, you boycott GM because I own a GM car, you know. You boycott GM because of the suppression of the electric car. I mean, that's a very interesting case right there. But in a way, too, it's like, I mean, we've heard different. I mean, I completely disagree with what Todd said about hanging people. It's like, you know, wait a minute. You know, I think that's completely over the top to me, even though I think these people are guilty many of these people are guilty of heinous crimes and are mass murderers and certainly should be in prison, but I don't want to hang anybody, you know? Like, I mean, I just think that's completely wrong, but that's just me, you know? So somewhere, like I say, you have four different people here on the show today who all on some level see that there's something very seriously wrong, but we all, as Phil says, there's facts, there's interpretations. We all have very different interpretations and very different perspectives on what should be done and what we might do. I mean, part of me is this reminds me of, like, Gurdjieff and Uspensky telling Gurdjieff in 1917 when there's chaos, like if people are being shot in the streets in Russia and saying, well, the work must be suspended because nothing can be done at this time. And Gurdjieff said, on the contrary, this is precisely the most important time to work on yourself and to apply the work, because all around you have this mass hysteria and this mass hypnosis conducting itself, playing itself out, and that's when it's most important to try to awaken and to remember yourself and to work again. To work against all this inertia. And I see that in a way, like, in terms of all of this. Like, I mean, just because you woke up to this a couple of years ago, it doesn't mean this hasn't been happening for a long time. You know, and it's like I sort of see on some level, I think it's a bit kind of a pipe dream and sort of grandiose to consider that, oh, okay, well, I sort of woke up to this. It's like, well, you know, what do you think is going to change? Like, you know, as I say, I have different feelings about how you react to this. Like, I mean, part of me, like, you know, says, like, you know, the most important thing is to remember yourself always and everywhere, and everything starts from that.
Yeah, I think some of your points, what Phil was calling in about, in a way, but part of his intent is, like, let's not lose the consciousness here and that consciousness studies, like. I think that was part of your point, what Jim's reiterating here, eh?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's focus on what we can achieve and where we should go from here, you know, and what will actually work as some sort of effective strategy, given that we are tiny microbes in the power game here, you know?
Yeah.
And microbes, like microbes, our power is in our numbers. And but we got to be concerted action. And, you know, Alex, for example, Alex Jones, he's got an audience now of millions, but
does
he wastes a lot of time with, things we can't do anything about. Let's just keep
it. Oh, it's funny. I just don't see it like that. I see the whole system as changing. I see it as we're either going to end up in a police state where these people affect their world domination, or we have a new world where there'll be abundance for all and all these new inventions will come out and we'll realize
that's
gone on.
You know what I think? What's going to come out of left field and hopefully soon is, you know, I think this quantum gravity theory that I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
A breakthrough in science could do it for us on many levels, because a breakthrough in science, let's say, you know, how close are you to the Perimeter Institute, Chris?
About 4 hours.
Oh, okay.
I went there once.
Okay.
Left copies of my books for Lee Smolin.
Right. These people are working on quantum gravity, things like
Sorry?
That. And if ever a theory of everything, for example, were to be discovered to the point that we can decode the metaphors in the Bible and all these other holy writings, to the point that we can decode what Blavatsky was trying to say, to the point that we can decode all of the remaining issues that mainstream science has on its plate right now, that will... And that is an event that cannot be, you know, scheduled as part of some conspiracy. And whoever comes up with that stuff is going to have such a bully pulpit that there will be very beneficial, although, you know, it's going to be a rocky period because it's a paradigm shift.
Phil, I don't know what you've heard of my discussions of Blavatsky and what you know of some of my writings on it. Do you realize that I say human beings have a mini black hole at the heart of being?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know if you grasped that from my work, because one of the idea of zero points, and that we have such centers down, like singularity points.
Well, when I called some months ago, I was discussing that with you, and my question to you was, I tried to convince you in that phone call some months ago that your doctrine of the heart, you are taking the concept of the heart literally when it, I believe, is metaphorical, even in Blavatsky. Because on the one hand, you talk about the physical heart, and you try to find ways that, you know, that photons and light are being generated. The heart, in my opinion, is just a pump, okay? I'm not speaking of the chakra associated with it. I'm just speaking about the physical heart. And on the other hand, then you talk about what you just told me, is that the core of every physical system, not just humans, might have a singularity or a tiny minuscule region of infinite energy and density. In other words, pure information.
Yeah, kind of a zero-point center. Yeah.
A zero-point center, exactly. And that is going to be part of a correct quantum gravity theory. That's why I don't understand why you retain this insistence that the references to the heart are literal rather than metaphorical. We are speaking about the heart as the center.
Well, I'm saying that I think there are levels to the physics of the heart. And on the one level, there's a physical heart, but then I say there's a psychical heart, spiritual heart, and then the divine source emanation. So these higher dimensions are not of the... Well, they're of the heart. They're within the same space underlying the dynamics of the physical heart.
Do you remember...
I'm not saying these things are in, not wanting to say they're in the heart so much, but they're underlying it in terms of the physics of space.
Well, I think that Blavatsky was very close to the mark. It's a bit difficult to penetrate because she uses terminology that's difficult, and a lot of your work has clarified a lot of that terminology. But I think that Gurdjieff had the right idea when he speaks about, you know, the fact that it's very difficult, if even possible, to observe the centers of our of any system. You know,
yeah.
We can't even look at the sun. We can't find the specific center of the human body. It's very hard to find. We have to speak about in terms of a circulation around a center, okay? We have to speak about these zones of circulation around the center and the Mi-Fa interval, law of octaves, all that stuff. That's all really also going to be part of a correct quantum gravity theory.
And okay, so I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut us off, Phil. We've kind of come to the end of the time.
Okay,
do
great,
feel
guys.
Free, if you're around in 2 weeks' time, let's have further discussion of this and try to go into some of the zero-point physics and explore this again.
All
so
right,
thanks
please,
for calling in.
Please call
thanks,
again,
Jim,
because I want to ask you some questions. So, yeah, please call again.
Jim,
yeah,
can I get your email?
Yeah, it's. Do you have a pen?
Go ahead.
Jay Moffat.
Yep.
Moffatt,
yep.
1181 at
yep.
yahoo.ca.
Gotcha. Thanks.
And I
thanks.
Encourage listeners to visit my website. I hope to revise my website this week at www.zeropoint.ca. I'd like to thank Phil. I'd like to thank Don for coming in and contributing. It encourages me and inspiring. It gives more hope to realize that this truth is coming out around the world. Okay, so we all want to remain upright of heart, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Thanks, BBS Radio. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.